Trendstorm.
Our final topic, picked by you, dear listeners, earlier in a poll on our Facebook page, is Venezuelan crisis. The new Cold War spreads to South America, focusing on the latest crisis in Latin America. The new Cold War between the unipolar and multipolar bloc spread to South America with the Venezuelan crisis, and next week's Lima Group meeting in Canada will hint at what's to come next. Self-professed wannabe president Juan Guaido is publicly backed by the U.S., its hemispheric allies, and several of its junior partners elsewhere across the world. Maduro has the support of great powers such as Russia, China, Turkey, Iran, and India, and the rest of the international community has yet to take sides, though that might change by next week. Maduro rejected the EU's ultimatum to hold new elections by next week, so it's possible that many of its constituent members might soon follow in the EU Parliament's recent footsteps by recognizing him as Venezuela's interim president. Just like during the most dramatic crises of the old Cold War, this latest one in the new Cold War is dividing the world into opposing camps. And there are veritably certain proxy dimensions to this asymmetrical conflict. Russia and China invested billions of dollars in Venezuela that could disappear if new U.S.-backed authorities renege on these financial, resource, military, and infrastructure deals. In addition, the U.S. has made no secret out of its desire to capture Venezuela's oil reserves, which are the largest in the world. From the U.S.'s perspective, Venezuela is the beating heart of multipolarity in the hemisphere, and its strategic partnerships with Russia and China make Washington very uncomfortable. Trump is also ideologically opposed to the country's socialist model and hates it with a passion. As of now, the military has largely remained loyal to Maduro, though Guaido's access to upwards of $7 billion of recently seized PDVSA assets in the U.S. could give him plenty of cash to throw around in attempting to bribe his way into power. Furthermore, the U.S.'s latest sanctions could exacerbate the economic crisis in the country and therefore catalyze more pronounced protests that could be exploited for color revolution purposes. In the worst-case scenario, a multilateral, U.S.-led military intervention by the Lima Group countries could also take place under the pretext of responding to deteriorating humanitarian conditions, but in reality designed to implement a regime change there. Developments are therefore unfolding very quickly in the Bolivarian Republic, and it's anyone's guess what could happen next. So, folks, what's happening in Venezuela has the whole world watching, eagerly seeing what might happen. Nobody knows. It's anybody's guess. But if there's anybody that can give us some crucial insight on what might happen next, that's Mr. Nino Paglizia. He is a Venezuelan author of Cuba Solidarity in Canada, 5 decades of people-to-people foreign relations, and a retired researcher from the University of British Columbia. Nino is also a regular on my program, and because he knows so much about his homeland, we're going to have an extended interview with him for the duration of our program.
Trendstorm.
Okay, Nino, Guaido is publicly backed by the U.S., and its national security advisor John Bolton recently said that his country has an interest in Venezuela's oil capabilities. So, to what degree does this delegitimize the anti-government movement, or do its supporters not really care and are emboldened by this instead?
Well, definitely the position, the U.S. position of recognizing a totally legitimate usurper of the Venezuelan government, it's totally unacceptable. What is happening is trying to create a fictitious government, a parallel government, by which then it would be entitled to take over some of the functions. And the U.S. would respond to that. It would definitely feed into a more entrenched position of conflict between the legitimate Maduro government and the fictitious or parallel Guaido government. So that is totally unacceptable and extremely, extremely dangerous, because it will create the conditions for even a civil war, if you want to call it, on the style of that happened in Syria. And when you hear that, in fact, there are already troops going into Colombia, and there are Israeli troops even going into Brazil, the whole situation in the region, in the regions particularly close to Venezuela, it's extremely, extremely dangerous. And that, I think, is totally, totally a reckless position that the U.S. and other nations, its allies, are taking against Venezuela this time.
Yes, I mean, it's definitely very dangerous. And I want to ask you now about what can be done, I mean, in the domestic political sense for resolving this, because Maduro rejected the EU's ultimatum to hold new elections by next week. But he did say that he's interested in talking with the opposition and even President Trump, if Trump wanted to. So do you think that Guaido will try to cut a deal with Maduro? Or has the crisis passed the point of no return and he and his supporters might only resort to violence?
Well, that is sort of, at this stage, I think it's still sort of difficult to assess. I think we can only imagine the different scenarios that would, you know, be likely to happen. Of course, the ideal scenario would be that there would be further dialogues, conversations, mediation, all sorts of possibilities that would eliminate the danger of a conflict. But of course, the positions would have to be entrenched. I mean, the opposition, and Guaido represents the most radical opposition at this time. I mean, they've always been against any possibility of dealing with the Maduro government. And their only goal seems to be get rid of Maduro at whatever the cost. And the U.S. is certainly fueling in that direction. So possibilities that remain definitely would have to be mediation, definitely would have to be conversation and so on. But I think we have two different positions here. Maduro has always open, has been always open to a dialogue. Even recently has been saying that. Whereas Guaido and the radical right-wing opposition supported by the U.S. and other governments, you know, are entrenching themselves into their position. And that's what, you know, makes it, as we said before, an extremely dangerous situation. For the time being, we have to watch and see.
Okay, now you remarked that Guaido's position is becoming increasingly entrenched and counterproductive. And I think one of the reasons for that is that the U.S. warned Venezuela against detaining him, even though he is breaking the law by committing sedition and attempting to carry out this coup against the government, because the U.S. is threatening Venezuela with what it terms as serious consequences if something happens to Guaido. So do you think that Caracas will risk Washington's wrath by arresting him, or will it implement other measures against him instead if his anti-government movement gains ground?
No, I don't think that the Maduro government will try to make the situation worse by taking irrational, erratic position. Because the Maduro government, we have to understand the Bolivarian Revolution has never been such a sort of a, you know, a dangerous or a drastic or repressive, I should say, government. I think it has always been trying to manage democratically and within the Constitution all actions that it has undertaken so far, despite of what we hear from the mainstream media, etc. So given that track record of the Maduro government, I doubt very much that it will go to the extreme arresting Guaido or any of his followers and so on and so forth. In fact, the last I heard is that the Maduro government is looking legally at all options available according to the Constitution, according to internal laws, and so on. One of the measures, in fact, that has been taken is to close or freeze, I believe, or whatever the term is, Guaido's account. He has been forbidden to leave the country. And I think this is pending, you know, all other possibilities or legal responsibilities that Guaido might have by having taken that position of self-appointing as president of Venezuela. So I think the Maduro government will not, definitely, that is my opinion anyway, make it such that would take any action that would be illegal and irresponsible.
Trendstorm.
And now, Nino, if we look at the larger international perspective here at play, the U.S.-backed Lima Group is impressive in number, but of questionable importance when it comes to the actual substance of what it's capable of achieving. So what do you foresee the outcome of next week's meeting in Canada to be? And do you think it'll mark another escalation in the hybrid war in Venezuela?
First, let's give some context to the so-called Lima Group and Canada's role in it. As you say, the Lima Group is of questionable importance. I would also add of questionable credibility. The group of 14 countries came together in 2017 when the Organization of American States failed several times to condemn Venezuela based on the OAS Democratic Charter. The group claims to mediate and respect the principle of non-intervention, but they openly sided with the violent opposition. Not very smart if you want to be a mediator. They have repeatedly broken Article 19, Chapter 4 of the OAS Charter of 1948 that forbids any kind of intervention in other member states. Canada has taken the leadership role within the group that does not include the U.S. But this is relevant. It is clear that there is a division of tactical labor in the region. Washington is behind all major heavy-duty play for regime change and destroy the Bolivarian Revolution by using all the hybrid war tricks, whereas Ottawa plays a minor role, but in full coordination with Washington, by maintaining a necessary cohesion among a smaller group of Latin American countries and keep them on track. To be clear, Canada has also issued its own sanctions against Venezuela. Now, given this context, the group's meeting in Ottawa on February 4th, possibly with the absence of Mexico or with Mexico in a more conciliatory tone within the group, would not be able to escalate the level of the hybrid war in Venezuela more than it is so far, but it will add fuel to the fire. We can probably expect another threatening declaration against the Maduro government and some repetition in recognizing Juan Guaido. The overall idea will be to give the impression that the Lima Group is a powerful bloc of nations and that Venezuela is isolated and a danger to peace in the region.
Okay, Nino, well, in your last answer, you brought up sanctions. So what effect do you think that the U.S. has recently imposed sanctions against Venezuelan state oil company PDVSA will have in the context of the crisis, both in terms of how Guaido could instrumentalize his access to upwards of $7 billion worth of assets, and also the impact that the loss of these same resources could have on the country's economy?
We have to remember that the U.S. sanctions of November 2018 were already affecting not only the gold sector, but also any other sector of the Venezuelan economy. Venezuela, so to speak, expected this new round of sanctions. In fact, most of the payments for the oil extracted from the Orinoco Belt required a prepayment before it was allowed to be exported to the U.S. In this case, freezing the accounts that hold the oil revenues has only a partial impact. Now, this is not to say that Venezuela does not need those revenues. Those are essential given that Venezuela cannot borrow on the international financial market. What is much more at stake is that the U.S. might take over the Venezuela-owned subsidiary Citgo, whose assets are estimated at $7 billion. This is what Caracas calls an act of piracy. As we speak, Venezuela must be looking at other markets for its oil if the U.S. decided to end all oil imports from Venezuela. But something that is seldom considered is that the U.S. sanctions on Venezuelan oil sector has a cost to the U.S. economy. If the U.S. stops all oil imports from Venezuela, it will have to substitute those with other potentially more expensive supply to satisfy its demand. But more damaging would be the potential U.S.-American job loss resulting from the partial shutdown of refineries that are geared to refine only the heavy crude oil from Venezuela. Finally, as for the revenues that cannot be repatriated to Venezuela, that could only recklessly buy an enormous amount of weapons to feed a disastrous hybrid war. And I certainly hope it doesn't come to that.
Okay, now I think that was a really good point that you mentioned about the U.S.'s possible job losses if the refineries that are customized to only deal with Venezuelan oil end up shutting down because of these sanctions. I hadn't thought of that, and I don't think many people are even talking about that. So I'm very thankful you introduced that into the conversation, you know. Now, as a closing question, Russia and China are firmly opposed to this rolling regime change campaign underway in Venezuela and have pledged their support for its UN-recognized government. So what realistic options are at their disposal for assisting it during this time of troubles, and how successful could such initiatives be?
Andrew, your recent article published in Eurasia Future, Russia's possible plan to assemble an Astana-like conference to deal with the crisis in Venezuela seems to address the question. It is never too late to open political spaces leading to peace, hopefully before a major conflict blows up, like in the case of Syria. In fact, we have also just heard that Mexico and Uruguay have called to hold an international conference on February 7th in Montevideo, with the intention to set the basis for a new dialogue on the situation in Venezuela with the inclusion of all Venezuelan forces. Now, specifically on Russia and China, we can speculate about the self-interest that those countries might have to protect their large investment in Venezuela. But Russia's suggestion is in keeping with its proven role as a balancing geopolitical actor. This is a factor that we need to keep in mind. We can also speculate about the compromises that would have to be reached. However, we should not forget that Maduro has been repeatedly calling for dialogue with the opposition in Venezuela and with Trump. And as Maduro stated just recently, he's willing to meet with the devil if necessary. Now, all those calls have fallen into deaf ears. The U.S. was responsible for calling off the only dialogue that had a chance of succeeding in the Dominican Republic between the Venezuelan government and the right-wing opposition. But if such a call also came from governments with a sincere interest in mediating in the Venezuela crisis, the possibilities of a peaceful resolution are great. I suspect that the U.S. will resist following that path, but it might reconsider if its unyielding and vicious position against Venezuela was publicly recognized and exposed. Now, given a chance, peace should always be the first choice, but sometimes it will have to be forced as the only choice possible.
Okay, Nino, as always, that was a very detailed interview that comprehensively covered the most important angles of the hybrid war in Venezuela, and you gave us a much better understanding of the U.S.'s regime change plans against the Bolivarian Republic. Thank you again so much for this extended interview. It was priceless. Much appreciated.
Trendstorm.
So, folks, if you want to sound off and share what you think about this, please send us an email at radio@sputniknews.com or find us on Facebook. Stay with us. And with this, we end this week's edition of Trendstorm, brought to you by Radio Sputnik. It was presented by me, Andrew Kripko. Thank you for listening, and take care.